Michael, thank you so much for being here today. I just want to take a quick second to introduce you. You've been a realtor for 11 years and you were a home builder for an additional 9 years before that. You've studied economics, so you're extremely data-driven. Actually, like when we were talking about your local market, the amount of information you shared with me absolutely blew me away. You helped 15 families last year, and already as of October 2025, you've served 16 families so far this year. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. What area do you focus on? What's your specialty area of focus?
Well, that's a good question. And to tell you the truth, I can't answer that because I don't really have a single area that I focus on. I would answer that by saying I work in Central Ohio. Franklin County probably accounts for 75-80% of all my transactions, but then all the surrounding counties, going out probably as much as 60-70 miles. I've done business in almost all the areas surrounding Columbus or Franklin County as well.
Gotcha. How big is the Franklin County?
Franklin County probably has a population just under 1 million, and then our statistical area probably is about 1.3 million, something like that.
So pretty
So
sizable area. And a lot we see the market shifting right now. What do you see Franklin County? Is it a seller market? Is it a buyer market?
well, it depends on how you define those terms. I would say, that we're still in a seller's market. Now, a lot of people look at the data and say, well, it's taking 30 to 40 days to sell a home now. Well, yeah, compared to taking hours, minutes, a few days, a week, taking a month seems like a long time. But if you look again economically at a long-term horizon, like the last 50 years, it can take anywhere from 3 to 6 months to sell a home. So we're still in a seller's market. It just is an adjustment to a lot of people because the last, probably since 2020, we've been in a, severe seller market. Now it's a seller's market, just not as severe. But I would argue that it's still nowhere near a buyer's market. Yeah, the inventory of standing homes, I think, is sitting at about 50 to 55 days for what's sitting out there unsold. So that's still not even 2 months. If we got to like 3 or 4 months, that's where I think at the tipping point is where you're starting to move into at least neutral market, not even a buyer market. So yeah, we're still, I would tell you, in a strong seller market.
That's great to know. I think a lot of people who are sellers, especially, are gonna hear saying their property is gonna stay on the market for 30 days. Is that until it is sold and it's off their hands, or is that until it's under contract?
Yeah, the at least the way our terminology would work, that's to go in contract. Typically, once you go in contract, assuming there's financing involved, you're probably another 30 days out just for a round figure to close. But we stop counting days on the market when you go in contract. So the sale time is again running between 30, 40 days. The unsold homes, the average time on the market for those right now is sitting at maybe closer to 50 days, 45, 55, somewhere in that range.
And is that pretty evenly distributed across all property types and price points, or are you seeing some segments of the market being very different?
Well, I've tracked the overall number, religiously for 10 plus years since I've been a realtor, really. But I haven't broken it down in terms of single family property time on the market, condo time on the market, multifamily time on the market. It's, the data that we receive routinely is just an overall number. Now I could slice it and dice it, which I do sometimes, but I don't have a breakdown for that.
Gotcha.
Know,
Well, in
condos versus houses versus rentals, let's say.
from your perspective, you serve a lot of families. You're one of the best realtors in your market. What are you seeing in the market? Just kind of like not intuition, but like a gut feel of like what are people wanting? What's holding them back from buying, or what do they want to see in the market, either to sell or to buy, whatever you're noticing.
Well, part of what I hear every year is at this time of the year, there's news noise, I'll call it, like, oh, the market's slowing down, you know, houses aren't selling so fast. Well, again, if you look at a cycle of real estate, at least in Central Ohio and probably most of the U.S., every year it has a January low point, usually a June 30th high point, and then typically it trails down towards the end of the year. So the slowdown and, you know, the sort of subtle settling of prices is actually part of the natural rhythm of the market, and not like, oh, the market's going bad. No, it's just going through the normal routine that it goes through every year, up, down, up and down. So it's not different in a bad market, and it's not a lot different in a hot market. The pattern actually persists in all those. Low, high, average. It still has that lowest point January 1st, highest point typically around June 30th, and then trailing down to a lower point again by December 30th, and then that cycle just reverses and starts again the following year. The difference generally is just that, you know, in the hot years, the amount of increase is higher and the amount of decline is a little less, but it's exactly the same pattern in every one of those markets. Bad market, up and down. Average market, up and down. And the hot market, up and down.
What drives that pattern?
Well, that's, I would tell you multiple things. One is, at least here in Central Ohio, January 1st, the beginning of the calendar year, what's the weather like? Well, it's usually pretty crappy. Cold, windy, at best it's rainy, it's gray. You've got things like, you know, after effects of January 1st. You've got, you know, college football bowl season, you know, all kinds of different things happening like that. And it's just not very clement weather to go out and be shopping around looking at houses. So that's one thing that hurts the early part of the year is January, February, March. We have a lot of inclement weather. So that just decreases the amount of foot traffic that you would get out into any, you know, homes that are for sale. Then as the weather picks up, you got the cycle of, well, school season is coming to an end, and, you know, for the next year, we want to be able to move into another property and be relocated. Then after you get to the peak of summer, or, you know, June 30th, we'll call it, well, we're enjoying the outdoors. We love it. We're taking vacations. We're traveling. We're getting ready for school. But all the time, the market's kind of trailing off a little bit. School starts. Football season comes in. Oh, the weather's starting to get bad. Oh, it's Halloween. It's Thanksgiving. It's Christmas. So the cycle persists, and I think it's a lot of just weather and routine habits that people go through that keep that cycle intact, you know, in all these, you know, economic cycles.
Now, good, bad, and different. I see. As I hear that, I'm thinking there's two parts of the equation. You have less people potentially listing, and you have less people potentially buying, which contributes to that downturn of sales. Which one do you think happens more, or is it a balanced version of both, less people buying and selling across the board?
Yeah, the variables I would tell you in that scenario is, you know, if January 1st, which is normally the lowest part of the market, if we have a string of rate cuts in December, January, and February, that will stimulate some buyer interest, and we might get a little bit of an uptick, you know, more than we might have had normally. I mean, to use even numbers, if the normal units of sales in January are 100 and we have rate cuts, well, maybe we go to 105, 106, 110. You know, and you got to think in incremental numbers, you know, mathematical statistics. That's how I think about it. You know, that's the kind of thing that could prompt a change. It doesn't go from 100 to 200 because of that, but rate cuts tend to stimulate, you know, more interest and more affordability, and that will increase the people on the margins, bring more people into the market that wouldn't have been in it because of something like a rate cut.
Makes sense. And how can buyers or sellers take advantage of the natural cycle of the market that is predictable and reliable?
Well, as somebody who historically has worked mostly with buyers, it's sort of changing because I've been doing it for 10 years. I'm becoming much more of a listing agent too. But again, that cycle of up and down it prevails through all these different economic scenarios. Average, poor, mediocre, hot, great. We still have that same cycle. So if you're a seller, where do you want to be? you want to be somewhere towards that top, which is, let's say, April, May, June, July, August. So as a seller, I would be targeting to be in the market in that pivot point at the top, you know, just before it or just after it. As a buyer, you know, again, if you look at it as that sort of pyramid idea, well, I want to be on the low legs of that pyramid, on the front end of it or the back end of it. And these are just mathematical, you know, statistical facts, not my opinion, but that's just what the math of pricing and the market tell me. So as a buyer, early or late, as a seller, in the middle.
So if a buyer has the capacity and the option to buy, like, let's say somewhere between November to February, that tends to be when they have the most leverage in the purchase. And for a seller, the opposite is true, from, let's say, April, May until July, August.
Yes, in general. But I would say, you know, January to March is a buyer window, and September to December is a buyer window. Those are the statistical, on average, best windows for the buyer. So by default, the ones that aren't best for the buyer are the worst for the sellers. And then the ones in the middle are the best for the sellers.
I love it. That makes...
The world doesn't work on, you know, a predictable cycle. It works on, you know, oh my gosh, we're pregnant and we're going to have twins. We got to do something. You know, that might not be in the perfect timeline. I just got a job promotion and it's in a different part of town. And, you know, for convenience, we need to move. It's a bad time to sell, but that would also mean it's a good time to buy. So, I mean, there's two sides of that, you know, story for everybody too.
So we have the pattern of the market that tends to be reliable. And then we have what actually matters, which is where, as buyers and sellers, we are in our life cycle and what we need to do.
Yeah, that's what prompts a lot of people. And, you know, other rhythms in there are things that when they're a first-time buyer in particular, well, they're either coming from their home, like their parents' home, or they're coming from an apartment somewhere. If they're coming from an apartment or a rental, they're tied to a lease. So that often handcuffs them in terms of, yeah, I know these are the best windows, you know, end of the year, the beginning of the year, but my lease doesn't expire until June 30th. Well, if you can go month to month for a few months, you know, you go in contract in September, you really probably don't close until October. So that at least puts you into the window that you want to be in theoretically. So those are the kind of things I would generally recommend for, you know, somebody who's a renter in particular. You know, even though your lease might not be in the right rhythm for ideal times, you can probably go month to month for a while and get yourself to that point.
And I'm going to switch gears a little bit and dive deeper into the clients and the demographic of the clients that you tend to serve. So you mentioned that you're mostly buyer heavy, although that's starting to shift. Do you focus mainly on first-time home buyers, move-up buyers, investors? What is your typical client, if there is such a thing?
Yeah. Historically, my typical client probably is a first-time home buyer. So I have lots of repeat buyers or, you know, move-up buyers as well. But if there's one single group that, you know, accounts for the largest volume over the years, it would be first-time home buyers.
And when first-time homebuyers come to you, what is their biggest need or challenge when they start working with you?
Well, obviously it varies, but in general, a lot of times they're not totally sure about, you know, what they want to spend or how much they can afford to spend. So often it's a question of like, what can I qualify for? You know, hey, I'm qualified for 400, pre-qualified. Let's say if they've already got that part out of the way. I'm pre-qualified for $400,000. Is that the mortgage amount or is that the purchase price amount? You know, those little details like that are important. Oh yeah, we're putting $100,000 down, so we're borrowing $400,000. Well, that's different than $400,000 is my maximum purchase price and I'm putting 3% down because I'm using FHA. You know, just information that the agent needs to determine, you know, how to help them best by understanding what their maximum is, and then what are they really comfortable with? You know, maybe $400,000 is a maximum purchase price, but the actual payment, even though they qualify for it, is not a number they like. So then you want to try to slide down and find something that's in a better price point for them so that they have a better payment figure that they can live with, which is what I try to encourage people to do routinely. Like, you know, just because you're qualified for $400,000, let's say, that doesn't make it a good idea to spend 400. Let's try to find something that will work for you for 300, if that's possible, because that's going to save you a lot of money.
And is the finances the part that they come to you? That's their biggest concern. Does that stay throughout the entire transaction, or does that concern evolve into something else?
Well, typically they might have done something online and got pre-qualified. If they've already spoke with somebody, I always encourage them to talk to somebody that I've worked with in the past, because I want to make sure that they've, you know, dove into all the details. I want somebody that's detail oriented that can discuss, you know, yeah, you're easily qualified for FHA, but actually can do one, two, or three other different little things. I can qualify you on a conventional loan. And while that might or might not be the best route for them, at least it gives them another option, because there are situations where, whether it's justified or not, some sellers will say, well, I'd prefer to have a buyer that's conventional because I don't want to have to deal with FHA buyer. Because in their heads, they think that that means they have poor credit, which is not necessarily true, and generally is not true. They won't get a loan at all if they've got poor credit. So anyhow, it's another step that it's smart to do a little more research to figure out, you know, what's the best program for me. You know, conventional sometimes doesn't have as good a rate as they might get on an FHA loan, but with a conventional loan, you know, there's some options to get rid of things like PMI that they wouldn't have with FHA. So there's just a lot that they need to consider, and I want them to consult with somebody that will kind of go through some of those different, you know, options for them as a lender. And I also want somebody that, this is me in terms of what I want my clients to work with. I want them to work with a lender who, you know, doesn't shut the phone off at 5 o'clock and is gone all weekend. I mean, most buyers are shopping in the evenings and on the weekends. And I want a lender that'll work evenings and weekends, because I want to be able to customize their letters for, you know, contract offers, and, you know, put them in the best position to negotiate, you know, good terms for themselves. And, you know, what might sound nice to have a boilerplate $500,000 pre-approval, if a home's listed for $399,900 and we want to offer them $389,900, I don't like to have a letter from the lender says, hey, they're pre-approved for $500,000. And now I'm presenting this with the offer and the seller saying, hey, I want $399,900. You're offering me $389,900. And I see with your pre-approval, you could have paid $500,000 for my property and actually done this deal. So I don't see any reason why I should be negotiating my price lower for somebody who can afford so much more. But if I have a lender that's out there on the evenings and weekends and gives me a new letter, it says, hey, my client's approved for $389,900. I'm sorry, you want $399,900. Here's what we're approved for. That's kind of my little angle, how I present it. You know, now they might come back and say, well, you know, we want more. Huh? You see my letter here, it's $399,900. Come and meet us at $389,900 and we'll make this work.
I love that.
And that literally is part of what I try to do routinely, but I need that letter to be customized for 123 Main Street and $389,900, so that, you know, hey, let's make it work.
I love it. So I have a two-part question for you based on this. Number one is, what is the most important outcome or experience that you want for your clients? And number two, how does your team of partners, vendors, whatever you want to call it, like loan officers, insurance, electricians, plumbers, inspectors, play a role in that?
Well, the partners, other than the lender, are often after the fact. Every once in a while, we do something like a 203K loan where you're buying and doing a rehab as part of the purchase. And in that case, we have contractors that come in. I've got a couple of general contractors that have been great for that specific circumstance. Aside from that, I just like to have them available to help my clients if they're selling, to fix, repair things, do remedies if they're selling, you know, fixing and repairing things there. The critical one to me, you know, in the, for the buyer side is the loan officer. And you know, I want somebody that's knowledgeable about all the different programs, FHA, VA, USDA, conventional, jumbo products. You know, I think you know, we're starting to see a little bit of like buy downs and, you know, a little bit of ARM product stuff, but I haven't done any in a long time. But just somebody that's versed in all those, because, well, you know, most people might fit in, you know, program A. I want them to know about B, C, and D, just because, you know, there are situations that's what we need to do. Also want the other key for me in terms of the lender is I want them to be able to help people that are kind of at the margins. Like, hey, I've got a 580 credit score. Can I get approved? Well, some people will tell you yes, and you probably can, but the terms are going to be pretty ugly. So it really is kind of an unmanageable situation. But if you've got somebody who's knowledgeable with credit and can look at this and say, well, you know, here are eight problems in your credit. You know, mm-hmm. what about all eight of these? Well, I don't even know what two of these are. Well, hey, if those aren't actually even accurate, if we can get rid of those two, guess what happens to your credit? We start inching it up. You've got, you know, some inaccuracies in your credit score. How can I help you clean some of that stuff up? You know, so all of a sudden 580 starts becoming 590, 600. You make a couple payments on time, correct a couple of things, and all of a sudden you're at 620, 630, and like, hey, now qualified for a conventional loan. A lot of people provide lip service for that, but, you know, you need somebody who actually will execute and do those kinds of things. So I've got a couple of different lenders that I've worked with. And again, because a lot of my buyers are first-time buyers, I mean, we'll, you know, we understand it might not be today. We might be a month. It could be 6 months, even a year out, whatever it takes to kind of get them on the right path. But that's the kind of help I think any lender, you know, should be looking to provide. You know, you do have a couple, you know, you might have a 700 credit score, but you might still have a couple issues in there, and maybe they're not even legitimately yours. You want a lender that can help you fix those things so that you go to 720 instead of 700. I mean, all these things can improve your, you know, your payments on purchases and your mortgage and financing costs. All those things are impacted. So
What I'm hearing is basically you're thinking like your clients, you really are looking at them holistically in terms of what's going to help them not just win the deal, but win a good deal that's going to stay with them for a long time. For example, lower purchase price, which comes from potentially a lender who is available, can adjust pre-approval so you can negotiate better, or a lender who can work with the client who's knowledgeable around different loan programs, around credit, to boost the profile of your clients so they can have a lower monthly payment and benefit from lower down payments well into the duration of the home ownership. So this is where you use your partners to help your clients. Did I understand that correctly?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Okay, because that is, I love your approach of how you're helping your client in not just the way I'm understanding it, not just in terms of like, hey, I don't care about just you getting the home. I want you to be in the home and be happy, financially set.
Yeah, well, I look at it like if that client was my mother or my son or a friend or whomever that might be, why would I treat my client who's none of those things any differently? It should be, if I don't think this is good for my mother, then I'm going to think it's probably not good for you as my client. Are you getting the best rate? Are you looking at your credit? Are you making sure that it's accurate? Mm-hmm. Those are the things that you need to do in order to get the best terms and rates available. And if there are problems, let's fix them. If it takes some time, let's be patient. Let's not rush into something just to get a deal done. Let's make sure that we get the right deal at the right price with the best terms and cover all of the bases for you the best that we can. Now, nobody gets them all covered all the time, but you know, you got to make an effort to try to do all the right things. And you know, to me, I would look at it like, would I do this for myself? Mm-hmm. No, I wouldn't do it that way. Well, then that's probably not how I'll advise somebody else to do it. Would I give my son that advice? No. Or my daughter? No. My mother? No. Well, then that's not the advice I give somebody else. There are times that you got to tell people things they don't want to hear. You know, we've looked at this and we don't think we can get you approved. You know, or you're a long ways out from getting approved. That comes up now and then. Most people usually are if they're home shopping. I mean, in general, I mean, out of every 100 that are shopping, I'd say 95% of them are doable. Then, I mean, it's the that people in the fringes that, you know, those kind of things are specifically extra helpful for. And the other part I don't like about what I've heard a lot of people talk about there is they've been on the fringes and they've basically been abused. Mm-hmm. People have given them money for BS, basically, that didn't really help anything, and they just got taxed, essentially, an extra $200 or $500 or $1,000, and they still have crappy credit. Well, a lender who's going to make a loan can help coach you through some of that stuff, and it won't cost you money, typically, so let's go for free. Free is for me.
I like it. What's one advice that you have for first-time homebuyers that's not commonly shared?
Well, some of the basic tips I try to give them all would be, don't trust the pictures. What do you mean? Well, I can tell you, most of the time you'll see pictures and they look great, and you'll physically go out there and look at it and think, I don't even think it's the same home, because the picture looks so much better than the real thing, or it looks so much bigger. But at the same time, I also say that because some of the pictures that are essentially crappy pictures are disguising what are actually good properties. So my advice is, if it's the right price and it's the right location, regardless of the pictures, good or bad, at least go out and drive around the area and probably go out and physically look at that home. The advantage of driving out to the area is, even though the property that they like, we'll call it property A, is maybe a perfect match for them, once they're there and they're looking at the home, they realize the home on either side of it, across the street, behind it, everything else is like a desert. You know, it's not a good place to be. So that probably might change your mind, but you understand that by physically going there. The other thing is, property A might be kind of a dump. You're physically there, you're looking at it, but in here, we'll say the opposite is true. Wow, this house and this house are super nice. Across the street is great, but everything behind this is good too. So even though this is kind of a dump, maybe this is actually an ideal spot, I would say, for somebody who's a first-time buyer. You want to buy something low around other homes that are more valuable, take some time fixing it up, repairing it, doing things like that. But again, how do you figure that out? You physically go there and just look around a little bit. Nothing beats seeing it, you know, firsthand. You know, don't trust pictures. Go look at it.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. That's really good advice. If it fits, what I really like is if it's in the neighborhood you like and the price is right, at least go check it out. Michael, we're coming up on time. How can people reach out to you? How can buyers and sellers reach out to you?
They can call me, text me, email me. My cell phone, 614-600-4554. My email is michaelbishop@howardhanna.com, H-A-N-N-A on Hanna. I've got a website. It's a good place to search around, especially if they're looking in Central Ohio. I mean, I think you can see stuff just about anywhere, but you know, I only work in Central Ohio. So that web URL is howtobuyorsellahouseorcondo.com.
I like it. It's good. And a lot of people actually watching, they want to make sure that they reach out to you when they're prepared. So is there like a homework you give people, or when do you suggest people reach out to you?
Well, in the perfect world, you know, they've done some kind of pre-qualification, but that's not required. In the perfect world, they've been out and shopped around a little bit and maybe drove through, looked at some homes in different areas, and they kind of know, hey, I want to live in, you know, area A or maybe B, but not C. I don't know. But some people don't really know, and we just have to figure it out as we go. That's okay, too. Some people have a specific school district or a school that they want to be in, or even a certain block. I mean, you know, this depends, but the more, you know, you know about these types of things, it just narrows the world down in terms of what you might search for, you know, and then knowing how much you can afford is a big piece of that. So just about every neighborhood, you know, you've got low, medium, and high. You know, where do you fit into, you know, what will work for you financially in any given neighborhood? So, but yeah, just call and asking questions. I can point people to lenders. I can, you know, get them started with something like that. That's probably a good first step.
Perfect. So Michael's contact information will be in the show notes. And now you know when and how best to reach out to Michael. Thank you so much for being here.
All right. Thanks for inviting me.